dwellings. I have been for a long time a real strong supporter and pusher of getting the commission to develop a secondary resource land goal, basically to allow different kinds of standards and different kinds of development on secondary resource lands. And it seems to me that this kind of farm use reporting, coupled with the effort to get that secondary resource land, I see there's some real value in seeing where we have the problems, where the non-farm dwellings are being granted, whether they're being granted appropriately or not, and really getting a good picture on the kind of problem we want to try to solve with what I hope to see as a secondary resource land goal.
Okay, thank you.
So, it is a lot of data that comes in. I think it does, it provides an increasing, what I think is an increasingly valuable database on what's going on out there.
Now let me go over, Senator Kintai, why don't you speak to your amendments, which I think are -7,
and I'm not sure we have them.
They're right over here.
Okay, why don't we get them handed out?
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, why don't we get the, I don't know what they are, but they're the Senate Bill 16 amendments.
Well, there are 4, 7, 8, and 16?
No, it's not 16. It's called 16. I mean, I just call it 16 because it represents what's in Senate Bill 16. We'll get this all sorted out as soon as we get the amendments distributed. I apologize. I just...
Okay.
8
equals 16. Okay. That's
nice. 7 is... 7.
Okay, so Senator Kintai's amendments are -7. And this related to a recent RUBA case in Lane County.
Oh, that's correct. It was not a RUBA case.
Sorry. Right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Senator Bob Kintai, District 14 for the record. A matter has recently come to my attention which I feel needs to be clarified in the land use statutes. On February the 8th, 1985, Fountain Springs staff attorney Mr. Robert Liberty presented a memorandum of law and fact to a Lane County hearings officer. The issue was a request by a retired couple, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Best, to build a home on their small woodland acreage so they could live on the site to facilitate management of the property. Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about the issue of whether it would or would not be appropriate for the Best to build their home on the site given the circumstances involved. And I want to emphasize that. I'm not here to argue the merits of this case, just one small part of it. However, I am greatly concerned about some of the arguments used by Thousand Friends in an attempt to influence the county to deny the application to build, which they ultimately did deny. Specifically, on page 12 of the attached Thousand Friends memorandum states, based on this information, this is a quote now, based on this information, the hearings official may conclude Mr. Best is no younger than his mid-60s or maybe older than 70. Under these circumstances, it is certain Mr. Best will receive no income from the final harvest in 2035 to 2040. It is also reasonable to assume that Mr. Best will be physically unable to carry out the management activities scheduled for the 2000-2010 period. It is also possible Mr. Best will not be alive to realize any income from commercial thinning during or after 2000, end quote. I believe the consideration of an individual's age, physical condition, or estimated year of his or her death by state or local government while making a land use decision should be prohibited by law. Although we can, although we probably cannot prohibit organizations like Thousand Friends from using arguments like these, we can clearly prohibit state and local governments from considering those arguments in their decision-making process. Apparently, Thousand Friends does not understand that discriminatory arguments such as these are totally inappropriate in Oregon's land use process. Therefore, in order to clarify this matter for Thousand Friends and others who may wish to use or consider such arguments, I am proposing the committee adopt the attached amendment to House Bill 2758, which reads, age, gender, or physical disability shall not be a consideration in making a land use decision as defined in ORS 197 015, subject 10.
Senator Cohen.
What's 015? Is it citing a house on farmland? I mean, because I, what that does is...
I'm not sure right now.
This, it, as it reads without knowing the site, it would mean that you're taking away any special considerations for, for elderly housing, for handicapped housing, which is what some of us have tried to do for a long time. I just want to make sure that, I just want to try to figure out whether you have it narrowly construed to citing a house and farmland, or whether it's the broad range of land use.
I don't remember.
Including where you sign a mobile home for.
Well, actually, sub 10 is a definition of land use decision.
Oh, so it's the whole thing.
So it is fairly broad, I think.
Well, yeah.
Special
review. Well, includes a final decision or determination made by a local government or special district that concerns the adoption, amendment, or application of the goals, comprehensive plan, provision, a land use regulation, or a new land use regulation, or a final decision with respect to which the agency is required to apply the goals, doesn't include ministerial decisions of a local government made under clear and objective standards.
There's already an acknowledged comprehensive plan.
Yeah, so it's really everything. I guess it really goes as far as the zoning, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. Mr. Banner, is he here? Can you speak to this at all?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Richard Banner from 1,000 Friends. I didn't hear the most recent exchange or the question.
Well, the question is, this amendment, which is age, gender, or physical disability, shall not be a consideration in making a land use decision as defined in the statute's land use decision. I mean, it's the land use decision, that's the site for land use decision.
Right.
Definition of land use decision. Does this language have an effect on current land use statutes that relate to, you know, disabled, there's some things about residential facilities for disabled people and all that kind of stuff.
I wish I could answer that for you. I suggest that you hear from the city's lobbyist. Russ Nebarn is behind me. He may be able to help you about whether there's any impact on county zoning authorities. Just offhand, Gordon Fultz and I were talking about this a few minutes in the hall. We couldn't think of any. But, and, you know, on that fast notice, I'm just not sure. Phil Fell from the cities, or maybe Russ from the counties, can help you on that. I simply wanted an opportunity to respond to some charges that Senator Kintyre has made about arguments. I'm sorry that I did not have an opportunity before today to understand what those charges were about. I think Senator Kintyre is taking them out of context. There's certainly no argument made in that case that people of a certain age ought not to be able to live in rural areas. That is something that our organization, of course, would never do. I think the materials that from which Senator Kintyre was reading was a factual argument made about whether or not this particular proposal for a forest dwelling was a legitimate one, whether the intent of the operator was really to, whether it was necessary, and the dwelling was necessary and accessory to a forest use. And I hate to see that taken out of context and any suggestion attached to it that we are somehow making an argument that discriminates against anyone who wants to live in rural areas. That's simply preposterous. I support Senator Kintyre's amendment. And the question raised is a good one about the answer about whether or not it has any impact on city and county ability to set areas aside or facilities aside for certain handicapped Goots. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kearns.
Mr. Boyer.
Sorry?
You're saying that Senator Kintai has quoted your words, but they are not properly placed in the context of the argument in the particular instance.
Correct.
However, I hear those words, it sounds like that it could be taken that some secondary and tertiary argument in your brief was that the individual in question was of too mature an age to either A, manage, or B, expect to harvest. What did those words have to do with the case in point?
The burden, the zoning ordinance, in effect, in that situation, requires that in order to build a dwelling in a forest zone, a demonstration has to be made that the dwelling is, quote, necessary for and accessory to, unquote, right, some sort of forest use.
Right.
And the situation that we see happening in forest zones around the state is that someone who really is interested in a rural lifestyle and would like to live on a parcel of forest land comes in and makes an argument that it's essential that I live out here to watch the trees grow. And what happens then is we get into a factual argument about whether we're looking at someone who wants a rural lifestyle, or whether we're looking at a situation in which someone, a house and an operator, is necessary on the site. And I have not read the memorandum. It is not my memorandum. It's Robert Liberty's memorandum, so I don't know precisely.
That's correct. Yes, Mr. Liberty. Excuse me.
I don't know about you know what the contents are other than what Senator Kintai read. And if you read the entire memorandum, I think you will see what I am talking about.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kintai could easily find themselves in the very same fact situation after we adopted this, and the same argument could be made.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. That's right.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, as I said, it was not my intent to rehash the case.
Well, I understand.
Just that this one point could not be used in any future cases.
Well,
okay.
Exactly, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that would prohibit the same brief from coming in on the same case, even if we adopted this.
Well, but it couldn't be denied for this reason.
Well,
this could not be used as a reason.
It could be denied that because you're in a wheelchair, you couldn't do some kind of work that was expected on some kind of plane or whatever. I mean, I guess that would, that it wouldn't necessarily, I'm not sure that this language would prohibit the discussion.
Well, you can still make the argument that on the basis of the fact situation with that person at age 92 and legally blind was not going to be, he was one age with a, you know, 35-year-old stand, not going to be there in year 70 of the stand, and then probably wasn't going to be doing much pre-commercial filling 20 years away. I think that could be presented, but the land use decision itself could not simply say, you're a geezer and you can't see anyway, so to hell with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what your amendment would do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sounds fair to me.
Alright.
I'm alright.
Okay. We do need to get some LC opinion on the impact of this amendment in relation to the question that Senator Cohen has. It's a question I would also have. Okay, there is one other amendment. Well, there's two others, but there's one other that is in LC form. I don't know. I think it's dash 8. Is that distributed?
Yes, it's 6. This one was reported to be 7L16.
Yeah, as amended by the House.
Okay.
Where is that going to be in here? Mr. Phelps, can you speak to these? You were involved in negotiations, as I remember, on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Gordon Phelps with the Association of Warden Counties.
this version of Dash 8 is the compromise that has been reached on Senate Bill 16 between the governor's office and ourselves and the League of Oregon Cities on the whole issue of state agency coordination. I think the only part of this that was amended from what you originally passed out of Senate Bill 16 is language in Section 1, lines 8 through 10, and the new sub 10 on starting page 3 and going on to page 4. Basically, that compromise deals with requiring state agencies to comply with plans unless they have, under the conditions of 10, that they can indeed impose their regulatory ability on actions that are called for in the plan as outlined in Section 10. And that was the agreement we all reached. That was not adopted by the House. It was scheduled for, but this is the agreement that the governor's office and ourselves came up with.
The major aspect of this amendment is in page 3 or page 4.
Right.
And it is that clarification about what the whole consistency compatibility issue really is. And basically, it's basically what we call it. It's what you call negative. I mean, it's called negative consistency. In other words, the state agency can't do something that isn't allowed in a acknowledged plan. That an acknowledged plan can't force a state agency to do something that does not meet their guidelines.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. It allows the agencies to use their regulatory ability to condition their permits and whatever, but not to to basically violate the plan. And that's right. What we had to strike a balance on.
I personally think it's a real good amendment, and I think it's very well worked out. Now, you mentioned the other change for what we passed was on page 1.
Yeah, the section 1, lines 8 through 10, in the original 16A that you passed out, we had language in there that said, unless specifically exempted from ORS 197, this is another way of saying that same thing that we've agreed to.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Foltz? Okay. Now, Gordon, actually, why don't you come back? We're going to have to, we may adopt these amendments today, but we're going to need to wait on the bill because of our need for an opinion from LC on this other question. Why don't you speak to nobody else except me? I just got a copy of this. I don't think anybody else has a copy of it, but you have an amendment which I'm certainly willing to consider.
We have Les Nibon, the planning directors, go through this amendment with you. It's one that we know of no opposition to, the support of Thousand Friends and LCDC. It deals with rural development and housing, and that's what you explain.
We all do have a copy of it now.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Les Nibon, Chief Planner, Marion County, on behalf of the County Planning Directors Association. I think the committee is aware of the Kern County case that created an issue with regard to what densities of rural residential development were appropriate outside of urban growth boundaries, whether or not those were urban or rural. Ever since that opinion came down, the LCDC staff has been very careful about submitting comments on almost every proposed plan and zone change in rural areas to the local jurisdictions, citing concerns about whether or not the proposed zone change or use is rural or urban, and suggesting addressing Goal 14. What this has done is highlighted to all of us the fact that we've gone into this program for over a decade without really very carefully defining what is appropriate rural development outside of urban growth boundaries, both in the exception areas that were designated for rural residential and in commercial and industrial zones. Also, as part of the secondary lands task force in evaluating soil suitability, we have developed a rating system where we actually now, I think, can identify soils that really do not need Goal 3 and Goal 4 protection at all. They're not primary, they're not secondary, they are tertiary, or what you would call non-farm and forest soils. And we recognize that some of those might be on the sides of Mount Jefferson, and they're certainly not the place where you want to build a house or a commercial operation, but some of them may be suitable for rural development. And yet, the way the goals have been interpreted in the past, if there was ever any doubt, LCDC encouraged the county to put it in a farm or forest zone, which precluded development. So we feel there are a number of issues stemming from the Kern County case and from the secondary lands discussions, which focus on the issue of rural development and the fact that we really don't have a goal that says that rural development is a legitimate part of the planning environment. It's treated as kind of an exception, as an anachronism, something that we tolerate because it's there. But it really doesn't indicate that any more rural development or what kinds of rural development are appropriate. And so we have put together, rather hurried fashion, some wording that we propose to add to either House Bill 3097 or this Bill 2758, that would suggest that the commission, meaning LCDC, study the need to adopt new goals and rules to identify appropriate types of rural development in goal exception areas and on non-farm and non-forest lands, and the commission provide a written report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use prior to the 1989 legislative session. I think if you talk to the DLC staff, they're certainly aware of the issue and want to get to it, but I think this direction from the legislature would give them a target and a charge and encourage them to organize their effort along those lines.
I know that there's been certainly been an issue in the Perry County plan over one decision that was made by the commission in terms of defining what, I can't remember,
I don't want to get into the issue, I don't remember what it was specifically, but it had to do with defining rural residential or something. That's quite a controversial decision. And I guess from my distance, I'm not real deeply involved, but I'd have to say that it was not a decision that was well and carefully thought out by the commission, but was rather sort of made. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it appears to be, and I think it does speak to the need for them to look at this issue to figure out what, you know, what can be done.
And Senator Babry, having talked to LCDC staff who are here and Dick Benner, as I suggested, they support the concept embraced in this language. So I don't know of anybody who would be opposed to this particular charge.
What is the committee's view on this kind of thing? Senator Kintai.
I would say I wholeheartedly accept this concept. This has been one of my chief gripes against the land planning process for many years.
Okay.
But I've known for many cases where land was set aside or called farmland and development prohibited. The land was too poor to raise an umbrella. But they tell them that it's a farmland and have to keep it for that. So I think it's a good step myself.
Okay. Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Jones?
Senator Cohen.
Yeah, the only reservation I have about it is I'm not sure. I suppose they could study the need to adopt new goals, the goals or something. I mean, I don't know what the word goals means there for sure, but I'm willing to, since it's only to...
It's kind of a permissive thing, just to... I mean, maybe what we're asking them to do is pay attention to this issue and look at it a little bit more.
I guess I certainly wouldn't want them to go off and come back with an adoption of goals. I mean, goals is a pretty big step. I'm not sure we need to deal with that in that to that extent. And I just want to make the record clear that it's not... Well, voting in support of this, I certainly don't... I'm not endorsing that... Somehow, a new set, brand new set of goals need to be started from scratch in that area and started over because there's something deficient in the goals.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, our intent was just to say that the two things that they do that could deal with this are rules and goals and study the need. We weren't requiring anything other than the study, basically. But if there is
need, make sure that the
I share, Senator Cohen. Would you have any objection to changing it to say the commission shall study the need to identify appropriate types of rural development or I mean something along those lines, so you just get rid of mentioning changing goals. You're the ones that are always coming and yelling at us about changing goalposts.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
I'm so sensitive that I've circled the capital G here.
Chairman, if we could have goalposts all the way around a football field, the counties would love it.
I'm sure we'd
score more often. No, Mr. Chairman, in drafting this, I originally intended to talk about adopting and amending, and I got grammatically all tangled up in doing that. And we're talking about the state land use goals. There is a proposal for a new goal 20 to identify and legitimize rural development. It may not be necessary to have a new goal, and it may be that it can be done through amendments. But right now we have a definition of rural land use that I think the Court of Appeals said is basically inadequate.
Okay.
And it's either going to have to be reinforced through rulemaking or some other mechanism. So we felt that that was the way to approach the subject.
I just wanted to make sure that the record would show that I'm not giving directions for them to develop a whole brand, a brand new goal that I have summarily said, you know, amending goals is fine, it seems it's cleaner to do it in terms of a total recommendation. I can understand that, but that's okay. Not the specific direction. Go out and change it and make a new goal from here, at least for my purposes.
Chairman, may we state a concern on one other of your seven amendments?
Maybe.
The dash four reporting requirement. Our request, our respectful request here is knowing how this has been so wonderful and we've loved it so much in the past, we would like to request that you make this for 2 years with the idea that in the next 2 year period when LCDC does do something on the secondary resource land issue, that what needs to be required in reporting may change. And so we'd like to see you put a 2 year period on it.
I'm not surprised that you're asking for that. Can I be real honest and say that I'm real sick of enacting farm use reporting every 2 years, and that I am quite convinced, given your active and excellent representation, that you will be back in 2 years if we don't need to do this with the bill up repealing this reporting and or changing it. I have confidence that you will do that.
Well, I think clearly that if you change, you know, if you get into the secondary lands area, you're going to change the style of reporting, and there's nothing here, I mean, especially even more importantly than when you want to continue the reporting, and you may, and there's nothing here that prescribes the exact format of what you have to report in such detail that you couldn't, you know, make a two-line addition or something to require the counties to do more. So there.
I do appreciate that. I guess it always gave us something to do and argue about.
Okay. Let me just, what's the feeling of the committee on these various amendments that are proposed here? Are they? Okay.
I'm happy to vote for some food.
I
want to make sure that we're not stopping something that gives special consideration to elderly housing.
If I may.
You might.
On Senator Kinchai's amendment, somebody said
that go ahead.
I might have some comments.
Yes.
Okay. Please. It's my understanding that most counties have provisions for temporary dwellings for hardship purposes. And those hardship purposes relate to either medical or psychological disability or problems of some fashion. There are also situations in zoning ordinances where, for example, in group care homes, the local ordinance may say serving those people 62 years of age and older. And the comment I wanted to just enter into the record is that I have some concern that in ordinance construction at the local level, the factor of age and disability and this kind of a thing has come into play. And I would be concerned that the wording of the bill not preclude local jurisdictions from considering that where it's appropriate.
Okay.
And my initial reaction to the bill was that it be reworded to say that age should not be considered a factor in a denial of the land use application to try and limit the scope of it, but because I think that's really the issue, at least in the case that he was citing, and that that would then not preclude the jurisdiction from setting certain criteria and standards that might include age or physical disability. There's been a lot of legislation directing us to provide housing for adult foster care and other kinds of things, and a lot of those regulations may get us into the area of putting standards relating to age or disability, and I would hate to have this bill jeopardize all that.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks.
I think that's here's what I'd like to do. What I'd like to do is I'd like to, if the committee's willing, I'd like to adopt the four sets of amendments with the intent of basically deleting what's in 2758 and inserting in its place the four sets of amendments. So that we can get it all back in one piece to deal with. With the caveat that we would need to check with counsel about the whole question of age or gender, with a suggestion along what Mr. Nivon suggested, that we'd be talking about it not be used as a factor in denying a land use decision.
We could just deal with that one.
Now, Mr. Chairman, did you say we take all this out of this?
The provisions of 2758 are fully
covered in
39.7.
Okay.
So
they're not really visible from the state highways, and the rest of that section would stay. I have no real problem with
it. We're taking out everything, starting with visitor order down the highways.
Just delete in the middle of line 5 on.
I'm not sure what we're looking at here. Unfortunately, I'm looking at another piece of information that we gave the committee the day before yesterday, which included another section.
Can you give them the dash 9 amendments?
No, I see. You've already dropped out the other part that I wanted.
What
part was that?
It was in what we had recommended last Wednesday.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's the language regarding limiting outdoor advertising signs.
Oh.
We outlined two ways that we felt that resorts could be designed and located so that they didn't attract highway visitors. One was the screening, and then the second was to limit signs just to the logo locational signs. And I believe Representative Agron's indicated that his preference in trying to orient away from highway travelers was to limit signs rather than to require screening in all circumstances.
Let me
ask you this. I got your amendments that you proposed. So what does it mean to say you're limiting to logo signs? Well, what are we talking about?
The little things on the highway.
What kind of sign are you doing on the resort?
The signs that are referenced here, and I'd like to answer that and make one additional comment if I could, Senator Bradbury. The signs that are referenced here are the directional signs under Chapter 377 of Oregon law that we see on our state highways and interstates. That would not prohibit a sign at the establishment for directional purposes either, however. I don't believe the State Highway Department interprets it that way. If I had my druthers, I would probably drop the last sentence that deals with tourist-oriented directional signs, but keep the earlier sentence, the sentence above that, that indicates visitor-oriented accommodations shall, to the extent physically feasible, be located or screened, etc. We think it's fairly important we address that issue in one of those two ways. It need not be addressed in both.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
I can think of many situations, at least in my part of the country, where there are already old destination resorts, been there for a long time, either along the stream or along Clowns Lake or someplace where they've been serving that purpose for many, many years, which are indeed visible from the highway, and yet nobody regards them as a motel, nor that they're there to accommodate transient traffic. Everybody, you can tell that that's a little resort. And I think that's our purpose here. And so I have no problem with somehow finding a way to see to it that some neon sign that flashing vacancy, you know, is not along the highway. But an attractive sign such as Sun River has, for instance, with their logo. I'm not talking about the highway, the little funny highway things that say eat or get diesel gasoline or whatever.
Easier to get.
But I mean, you know, and I don't know how you would properly define it, but some attractive sign that says Shady Cove Resort, you know, or whatever their logo may be, Silver Creek Lodge, you know, I don't know what it might be, alongside the highway, that neither indicates a flashing neon sign or says vacancy, but identifies that this is the place and you turn in here. That's what this is.
Senator Karen.
OS 377 is the logo program of the State Highway Department. Is that not correct? We've determined that already. I would move the following, that we, in the Dash 9 amendment, that it read as follows. The resort shall be designed and located so that it is not oriented to transient highway traffic. Period. Resorts shall not use any manner of outdoor advertising signs except the tourist-oriented directional signs as provided for in ORS 377. Period.
Well, but, Mr. Chairman, if I
may... Same as the department's first one with the middle sentence taken out.
I'm not sure but what that doesn't limit you to some size and style of highway sign.
That's the highway sign.
Yeah.
If you're signing on your own property, you can go ahead and do that.
Okay.
That doesn't prevent somebody from putting a sign.
Oh, except for on-site directional sign. Well, I don't know how you got to say it, but I think I made myself clear as to what I'm trying to indicate.
Explain your amendment, Senator Karen, so that
my understanding is
highway logo.
This is a highway logo.
On the highway.
Yeah. You can still have on-site directional signs.
That's correct.
Steamboat Inn. I mean, yeah. I drive by the Steamboat Inn.
You get up there, and there it is. There it is. Boom. I can turn right here. But I've got a logo a half mile down the road telling me it's coming.
Now, that's my understanding. Is that yours?
Senator Brenneman.
How would that change the way things exist now? It wouldn't be any different.
That's a good point.
You know, the problem you have, can you get the 377 sign without this amendment?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And where is it
in there in the first
place? Oh, you're just trying to get away with advertising. Oh, I see. The two-story flashing light, meteor, no gas, cheap diesel.
Yeah.
Vacancy.
Right.
By the hour.
That
sure is.
And I have no problem with that concern.
Mr. Chairman, I think your intent is to allow an on-site sign in addition to the blue logo sign. So
that's correct.
And maybe the best way to do that is add to the end of that sentence after, as provided for in ORS 377, say, and on-site directional signs. So it's on the property of the resort, and the purpose of the sign is directional to indicate here is the place. Now, there isn't a definition of directional as opposed to advertising, but I don't know what other direction you can give that tries to make that distinction.
So the amendment, I don't know. So Senator Karen's proposed amendment would read, the resort shall be designed and located so that it is not oriented to transient highway traffic. Resort shall not use any manner of outdoor advertising signs except for the tourist-oriented directional signs as provided in ORS 377 and on-site directional signs.
Period.
Mr. Chairman. Senator
Brennan. Jim and Bob. The thrust of the amendment is to control signing on a destination resort. We are going to give an example of a destination resort in the state that has bad signing.
No, I don't believe that's exactly the point. Our concern is the orientation of the development to try to distinguish a roadside motel who is attempting to orient toward highway traffic as a principal purpose for business, as opposed to a resort whose principal business is traffic that is intending to go to that location when it leaves home or be there for a longer period of time.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's the divide the motel six
accommodation from someplace where upscale dinks are going to go.
It's a new.
Some existing resource. Let's take Salishan, for example. If we could scale it down and make it a small destination resort, they're located right on the highway. Their golf course is on the highway. Their sign sits on the highway. And yet, with the exception of the golf course, when you go by there, you can hardly tell it's there. It's done very peacefully.
Senator Boone, we matter of fact talked about Salishan earlier today, and believe it meets this standard, because all we're talking about is screening is the visitor-oriented accommodations, and I believe Salishan's lodgings are set well back from the highway and pretty well screened, and the sign that you see that they have, in addition to the logo signs, I would say is a directional sign as opposed to
an answer. The pro shop is screened.
That's true, but I don't believe that would qualify under the what we're calling as visitor-oriented accommodations. Those are the residential or the lodging units, meeting facilities, and the restaurant.
I move those amendments.
Senator, okay. I want to place the motion. Senator Karen moves the amendments that I read a moment ago. Senator Kintyre.
I just had a question there on this being not being transit oriented. Now, does that wouldn't forbid them from taking in some of the travel that just stumbled in there, would it?
No, it would not.
All right.
Okay, let me just clarify the amendment. Let me just read it. The resort shall be designed and located so it is not oriented to transient highway traffic. Resorts shall not use any manner of outdoor advertising signs except for tourist-oriented directional signs as provided for in ORS 377 and on-site directional signs.
The end.
That is the amendment.
That's right.
Okay. We might as well deal with is there any objection to the
Senator Graham? Question. Jim and Bob, would that mean, again, let me use the Salishan as an example. Their sign sits out on premise. Would that complicate matters for someone locating in a position such as theirs with their sign?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Benjamin, I interpret, and correct me, Bob or Representative Eggers, if you disagree, I interpret Salishan's sign to be an on-site directional sign, is it not?
It's on-site, is it not?
Yes, it's on-site.
Right.
Oh, well, that's, you could locate one like that.
That's correct.
Sure. Okay.
Well done.
Okay, is there any... You don't vote. Mr. Nebon. We're trying to move right along here. We really
appreciate that.
Kind of stuck here for too long.
Mr. Chairman, Russ Nebon, my comment relates to the term on-site directional sign. In most zoning ordinance, a directional sign is the enter-exit that you see at the McDonald's driveway.
Okay.
And if you're talking about having an identifying sign for the destination resort, then you need to call that out. Yeah. Just having on-site directional signs, nobody's going to know where they're at.
Okay. Thank you.
You're right.
Thank you. How could this be so difficult?
Very easy.
The word is identifying.
Okay. Identifying signs.
How about on-site identification, identification and directional signs?
Or just identifying, on-site identifying signs.
On-site identification and directional signs. That would be my amendment, Mr. Chairman. On-site identification and directional signs. Mr. Chairman, question on your dash. Eight amendments. Did we agree by consensus to take out lines 2 through 4? Is that
Well, let me just put that. Senator Cairns would move that we adopt the dash eight amendments with the deletion in the dash eight amendments of lines 1 through 4. So we did not change the definition of overnight lodging. We just changed the word from visitor accommodation to overnight lodging.
Yeah.
So any objection to that?
This is, the effect of that is to...
Well, it's just, it's all it is language confirmation.
No, I'm saying the deleted material, the stuff that I'm not moving on, destination resort combined 115 units or more of overnight lodging, that's the owner...
Occupied.
Okay. All right. I've moved that amendment without was 2, 3, and 4.
Senator Graham.
Is that a signal all right, Representative?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
As I understand it.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there any,
Senator Graham,
is there any objection? Hearing none, so
much.
Thank you.
All right.
Our chair would move the -7 amendments, which have to do with clarifying what the Columbia Gorge is.
Yep.
Is there any objection to the -7 amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Now the, okay. The -10 amendment, I do think we need to hear from, let me ask you a question. It seems to me that as a resort goes through, this process, there is going to be some interaction with the local governing body. Correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What is your understanding of what that interaction will be?
It would either be with the County Planning Commission or hearings officer, most likely with the County Planning Commission and possibly with the County Board, but Representative Ahern's point should be well taken, and one should insert in the amendment after the county governing body the words or its designate or designee.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, won't they be doing this anyway?
Mm-hmm. But it may not in every county have to go before the county planning or the county board of commissioners.
Right.
But yes,
that's true.
Any resort is going to have one man or another.
Would I have to go through go in front of the planning commission?
Yes, but I think wasn't that Representative Ivan's point that the way the amendment was drafted is it would have to, in every case, go to the county governing body.
I read that as a commitment.
Well, I don't know, my point is, without this language, doesn't it go before the planning commission?
But that isn't the thrust of the amendment.
Okay,
I'm sure Bob to explain that.
I think our objective may be confused with the fact that we've assigned it to the governing
body. All right.
Our objective was to have a case-by-case assessment of the relationship between the resort and its purpose, that is, its relationship to a recreational activity, and make sure that there's a clear link and that that decision is made reviewing the facts of that particular case.
So what you want to say is in what are the circumstances that the proposal is reviewed by the county, they shall review
to ensure that
the purpose of whatever here.
Well, let me just. I understand, but the standards. Lowering my voice here. The standards are in the bill relating to the number of units. The level of investment,
the amenities,
the whether or not there's restaurant meeting rooms to meet the requirements, and whether or not the resort provides access to a recreational resource, are all standards that have to be met in order to be cited under this change of the law. Now, who makes that decision?
County governing body or its designate.
Why do we need the amendment? No, I'm serious. I don't. Why? That's what's going on today. Maybe they'll explain it to me.
That's not the issue, and I'm not sure I'm familiar enough with it to fully explain it. But the issue here is that rather than trying to legislate the relationship, one allows on a case-by-case basis the governing body to make that decision on a case-by-case basis. Now, Bob,
excuse me, they're going to have to anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that they're going to have, somebody has to make the decisions about whether the resort qualifies.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I think what we're trying to do is strengthen that standard to a test. The way that Section F is written right now says, shall primarily provide access to a recreational resource. And we're trying to make that the primary purpose of the resort is to provide lodging and those other facilities in support of access.
Okay.
So
that is different.
All right, it's subtle difference.
Okay. I'm sorry that didn't wasn't clear.
That wasn't clear to us.
It's a little bit different than saying these are things done.
Where does that? Oh, that's on page.
That's okay.
Page 395. What? Tell me what you think the difference is between the two sets of words.
The concern, Mr. Chairman, is that the relationship and the present language of the bill doesn't require absolute certainty that it's there. And I guess the best example I can give you is the fishing stream. If I can show that there's a fishing stream on site and that I provide access to it, that could be sufficient, I think, to meet the standard that's in the bill as it's written. What we're looking for is a stronger showing that the reason that you're putting the resort there, the primary reason, is that that what people will be doing when they go there, and the lodgings and the other things that are there not simply because there's a stream, but because they provide access to fishermen who use that stream.
Okay.
And I think the evidence that links the lodging and the other facilities with the recreational activity is a higher standard.
Mr. Chairman, may I interject some more confusion? When you say access, it seems to me that the provision of access implies that you govern the access to it and therefore control it and provide access. That getting me to model land manager terms, and I think that means something other than what the department is talking about. You may very well be sited in an area that has multiple fishing streams, mm-hmm. or other amenities or recreational opportunities, but you don't provide access to them. You do provide a location in which people can gather and go forth and enjoy these amenities. The access may be public access, which you don't control, and so you're not providing access. You're providing a convenience for people to come and be close to these amenities. That's why I guess I'm concerned about the access. It means, you think in terms of a private landowner who controls access to something, and who may permit free ingress and egress on the part of the public, or may charge a toll, or may preclude their access, you see. I think that means something other than what you want. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think that the original language sort of, in sub F of section 4, sort of did what you want, but...
Well, the chair tends to agree with Representative Agron. I think the standard that's in, now I don't speak for the committee, but I think the standard on page 3, lines 5, 6, 7 is in fact, I don't see where it's some big loophole.
The only addition is primary purpose, I guess, and it says primarily
provide access.
You've got to provide access there,
maybe. These things, playing this line might be helping me out.
Well, now, if you don't amend this, you can't not concur, because we didn't.
You've got in support of access to a recreational resort, and in your language, the original bill language, it says you have to provide the access.
Yeah. Now, that's,
and I'm not sure that's what you want to have there anyway, so maybe we do need to rework this a little bit. Because there's no, I mean, even the primarily provide access is not, it's not what he's envisioning here. You've stepped off into that.
I would say something more like the resort shall primarily provide accommodations convenient to or adjacent to or oriented to a recreational resource such as, but not limited to, and so forth. Accommodations oriented to these recreational opportunities.
Well, we need to do a little drafting.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
You can do it right now. Probably. Tired you.
Okay.
Joe's maybe got something. Not Joe.
It's Bob.
Bob.
I know it's easy to be confused.
Well, because I seem so funny. More than I want to say today.
Would you three mind caucusing in the hall for a few minutes on this particular issue?
My position is fixed, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you can go caucus, though.
No, I think we've kind of done it, haven't we? Didn't we?
Or have you got it here?
Mother has some language together here.
Yeah. Objecting this one?
Yeah.
Can you leave primary purpose in? The word purpose would be...
I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah. No. So what do you got?
Well, we're either in the F that we have suggested, the county shall review each resort proposed under this subsection and shall determine that the primary purpose of the resort is to provide lodging and other services oriented to support access.
Oriented to
a recreational resource.
Such as and so forth.
All right. I think we will buy that.
Yes, yes, yes.
We like that.
We did that, yes. Aren't we helped?
Okay, would you please give that language, would you read it one more time for us, and then we'll adopt it, and then you'll give it to our staff.
The county shall review...
This is a replacement for the -10 amendments, which is a new sub-F on page, line 5 of page 3.
Yes, sir. I guess the language we would suggest is the county governing body or its designation.
Right. Fine.
Shall review each resort proposed under this subsection and shall determine that the primary purpose of the resort is to provide lodging and other services oriented to a recreational resource which can only reasonably be enjoyed in a rural area. Such recreational resources include, but are not limited to, a hot spring, a ski slope, or a fishing stream.
Okay.
If it says...
we've got problems.
The rest of it.
Russ and Sue. Sue is shaking her head. No, not you, Russ. Sue, why don't you go up, too?
Sue Hannah from Legislative Council. We changed the last time because it doesn't read off the beginning of the sentence. We're going to have to move that. You can set a list of requirements and then set what the county shall do. I can take the whole business of what you said, but I'm going to have to put it somewhere else or change the tense so it makes some kind of sense grammatically.
Basically, so what you're saying is this is a list of criteria, and you can't have one of the criteria be the county has to make findings about a criteria. So we need to just put it someplace else in the statute that we have the county make that finding.
I'll dress it up. And
yeah, that's easy.
Get back to you. Just want to let you know that it's got to be changed. I did it once when I gave it.
Okay. Is there any objection to the adoption of that language, assuming we put it in the right place based on the Legislative Council's work? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Okay, I think we are done with this bill. We've adopted the -7, which we had to adopt. We adopted the -8. We adopted a version of -9, and we adopted a version of -10. Excuse me?
The -8 was a version of -9.
Yes, it was. Okay. Senator Bremen moves A.A. Groves House Bill 3097 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Bremen?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Tammy?
Aye.
Senator Kintyre?
Aye.
Senator Brandreth?
Aye.
Motion is adopted. Senator Bremen, would you carry that one?
Yep.
Sue's here. Well, yes, okay. Raleigh, let me open the hearing on whatever bill it is. 2036. Open the hearing, Sue, yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All I reached with Department of Fish and Wildlife, 2036, is a very simple bill. It has after amendments on the House side, two provisions left in it. Section 1 and then Section 2. All of page 2 has been deleted, so we can speak to that. Section 1 does one thing, allows the department to charge 50 cents when we issue fishing hunting licenses at our offices. We charge all license agents, which are the G.I. Joes, Kmarts, or whatever, now charge 50 cents per license under Oregon law. However, because of a quirk, it did not allow the department to charge that same fee, and that's caused some problems for various reasons. So this restores that. Section 2 allows the commission by rule to require license agents to deposit the funds on a daily basis, or the license funds, on a daily basis. Now they deposit them on a monthly basis, and the intent of Section 2 is to gain interest on those dollars that are now being held in private accounts.
Yes.
Okay. That's all the bill does?
Why do you need to charge the 50 cents?
For basic revenue, it will raise about $25,000 a year. And also the equity, we get a lot of folks coming to our facilities because they're free.
That's okay.
The license agents don't typically care for that.
All right.
And we don't really want them to
plug
us up either.
Okay. All right. Are there any further questions for Mr. Rousseau? Senator Kinnear.
You're depositing the funds. That was one that your department deposited. You're not asking every little collector out here to deposit every day.
Senator Kintai, we will be asking certain collectors to deposit every day. Those that routinely do with their own money, which are certainly those in metropolitan areas and the big operations, we're asking to do that with our money.
Sure.
If the small guys that live out in Rome, Oregon, that get to the bank once a week, we'll buy rural.
That's right.
A
guy that may sell one or two licenses a day.
Now, there'll be some limitations on size or location.
Okay.
Okay, any further questions? Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2036?
Any amendments?
No amendments. Close the public hearing, open the work session on 2036. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2036 to the floor with defense recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator
Hamby?
Aye.
Senator
Karen? Aye.
Senator Kintai?
Aye.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Senator Kintai, would you be kind enough?
Okay. The chair would move that we reconsider the vote, or actually just ask for unanimous consent that we reconsider the vote by which we sent 3097 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. The reason for my motion is that we forgot to deal with one issue that needs to be dealt with.
Okay.
Senator Yee has. Is there any objection to reconsideration?
Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Yee.
Okay.
I apologize. We just got through all these amendments, and I just went, let's get it out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One little amendment. I talked to our planner of Linn County, and he said that Sweet Home is still 2 miles within this 25-air-mile radius, and 24 air miles would be much better.
24
is 24.
24.
24.
24.
23.
No,